Audience participation suggested. KKFT is Nevada's Fox News FM talk station, 99.1
and 92.3 FM.
Current Reno temperature, we're about 53 degrees. I'm Todd Potter, live and local each and every Saturday, 9 to noon. In studio with us, Sergeant Chris Brown with the Nevada. Oh boy, is it Nevada Highway Patrol or is it Nevada State Police?
Well, I can answer that for you.
Yes, finally.
So it still is the Nevada Highway Patrol. Where Nevada State Police, or when you refer to Nevada State Police, you're referring to all our divisions. So you've been here a long time. You know, Department of Public Safety. You remember that?
Yeah, DPS.
DPS, that's still a thing.
So, well, we got to think of another operation now.
Yeah, so DPS and State Police are interchangeable. So when they put State Police into the statute, it replaces saying Department of Public Safety. So Nevada Highway Patrol is still here. We are still the Nevada Highway Patrol. We are a division of the Nevada State Police or a division of the Department of Public Safety.
I can't tell you how many arguments we've had in the newsroom. You said state troopers. No, they're state police now.
We're still state troopers, and we're still the Nevada Highway
Patrol.
There.
All right.
You answered it.
You can
myth
go
busted.
Now. Thank you. It was nice
yep.
meeting you.
Have a great
you.
Day. We'll see you later.
Oh, I drove by the Washoe County Sheriff's Office last night, and I thought, wow, you guys are the very first to put up Christmas decorations. It was all lit up in green, but it's not for Christmas.
No.
What is it?
Well, I'm assuming it's for Veterans Day coming up.
Yes, it is. It's called Operation Green Light. And the lights on your building on par are going to stay green through Veterans Day Tuesday to honor and stand in solidarity with those who served. Such a cool thing and a great idea. And we all need those reminders of the many, many sacrifices they made. Do you have many veterans on the force, on the crew there?
You know, I'm a veteran myself.
Are you really?
I am. So, you know, any support and celebrating and thinking of our veterans, it's amazing, right? Any time we can do that, and it shouldn't be just a day. It's single day.
Listen, so. I think it's an awesome and kind of an unusual thing, a public agency dressing up their building with green lights to say to veterans, we know you, we remember you, and we thank you for your service.
Well, the Washoe County Sheriff's Office is an amazing agency. They're an amazing allied agency to work with. So
yeah.
Great folks over there, and you know, we love what they do.
So besides patrolling the highways, you're also the public spokesperson.
Public information officer.
Okay.
Yep.
Now, I saw the pictures posted by the Highway Patrol of the snow up on Mount Rose Highway Wednesday. A pretty dramatic picture from the summit. Were you there?
You know, I was not. I have to credit those photos to Trooper Mike Baum, who was up there. I reached out to him and said, hey, man, he was up there dealing with some slide-offs, some crashes. I said, can you send me some photos of what it looks like up there? And he did great. He sent me some amazing photos, some great shots. So I appreciate him sending those.
And I remember on Wednesday reporting of all these, mainly the CHP was reporting a lot of spinouts on 80 on Wednesday. So here we are. It's about to hit us. Well, it's been quite delayed, but that winter is going to hit us. All right. Sergeant Brown, tell the people out there. And you know what? We have a lot of newcomers here. They don't know this stuff.
They don't. You know,
they come from sunny South California or something like that. So what do we have to do for winter?
Well, you know, now is the time to prepare, making sure your vehicle is ready, right? So a couple things. Whenever we get one of these winter storms, whether it's a winter storm, whether it's rain, any inclement weather, before you hit the road, really ask yourself, do you need to be on the road? Do I absolutely have to be traveling in this? That's the first question.
Yes.
The second question you have to ask yourself, am I a confident driver in this? Can I handle this? Right.
Yeah.
If you can't handle this, you should not be on the road. And there's no shame in saying, hey, you know what? My skills, I don't feel comfortable driving in this. I'm not going to put myself in that position. Because you got to remember, when you hit the road, when you get behind the wheel, you're not only taking your life in your hands, you're taking everybody else's life in your hands. So it's a lot of responsibility to operate a vehicle. It's something that I think we all probably take for granted on the safe operation of a vehicle and actually how dangerous it is to be in a vehicle, to be out on the highways. So now if you answered those questions, you say, you know what, I got to be out on the road. I got to get out there. Let's look at your vehicle first, okay? Before you start pulling out of your driveway, out of the parking lot, is your vehicle in the right condition to be out on the road? Tires. Do you have the proper tread depth? Do you have winter tires on your vehicle? Is your vehicle one of those vehicles that might need those winter tires, right? Do you have four-wheel drive? Do you have all-wheel drive? Really know the systems you have in your vehicle. And remember, four-wheel drive, all-wheel drive, it doesn't help you stop. It does help you get traction. That's it. It's not going to help you stop. So really pay attention to that. Your windshield wipers, do you have rubber? Has your car been parked out enjoying all this beautiful northern Nevada sun for, you know, the last several months? And are your wiper blades deteriorated? Are they rotted? Make sure that they're in a good working order, because once you do have that moisture, you're going to have dirt, grime, items getting on your windshield that you got to clear off so you can safely see out that window. Making sure your fluids are filled up, right? That windshield wiper fluid, you don't think about it necessarily in the winter, but you're going to need it, especially when you start getting that brine and that melt on the roads. It sticks on your windshield, and just a wiper blade itself is not going to clean that off. So you got to have that windshield wiper fluid. And then really paying attention to, what do you have in your vehicle? Do you have that safety stuff? I'm a Nevadan. We have a lot of rural roads in Nevada. You want to make sure you're prepared anytime you leave the house, not just in the winter, to be out in the elements, because there's going to be times if you travel anywhere in Nevada, and sometimes even locally, that you know, you're pretty far away from any resources, any help. So making sure you have extra clothing, food, extra batteries or charger packs for your cell phones, things along those lines. Make sure that you can take care of yourself and your family. If you got kiddos, things like that, make sure you have stuff to take care of them as well, not just yourself.
Well, this is serious stuff. Folks, if you just moved here, go to O'Reilly and get some chains to put in your trunk, I would think, because if we get one of those hammering winter storms here, you're going to need it, especially if you're going up the hill. You can check the conditions before you head up the hill on nvroads.com, which covers everything, everywhere.
NV Roads or Nevada 511, if you search that, it's going to bring up your controls. And you bring up a really good point there, is always check the controls, always check those restrictions before you hit the road, and make sure when you are out driving, you're paying attention. You know, those little signs on the side of the road that are flashing amber, they're there for a reason. Those signs that are above that have big letters on them, read them, pay attention to them. They're there for a reason.
And let me tell you, folks, they are strict up on that hill. I've been turned around a few times. And don't listen to Waze and Google Maps when they tell you to take, what is it, Donner Pass Road.
Yeah, no. I've fallen victim to that.
Every year, people go out there and they get nervous and they try to turn around, but they can't.
You know, it's a funny story that you bring up with that, the Waze and the TomTom. So I was on a family trip a couple years ago when we had that big snowstorm that shut down Donner for about a week. Do you remember that one? And we were over in the Central Valley for the holidays, and finally the mountain was coming back open, and we're heading back, and I'm going to call them out, my father-in-law, and they're in another vehicle, and we're talking to them, and we're stuck in traffic, 50's open, 80's still closed, and we're stuck down there. And he goes, hey, my GPS is saying go this way. And I'm going, no, we're not going that way. Don't listen to it. Stay here. No, we're going this way. I'm going to go this way. I'm like, listen to the trooper here. I'm saying stay on 50. Well, of course, my wife, the house commander, says, hey, nope, you're going to follow Dad, right? So we follow him. An hour later, we're up on some mountain, and guess what? We couldn't get anywhere. So stay on the road, you know. Stay down on those main roads, especially in the winter conditions. That's going to be your safest area. That's where the resources are going to be.
You know, I heard the first, I was walking yesterday, I heard the first clickety-clack from a car and its snow tires driving by. So there are some people who are prepared. What do you like most about this job?
You know, I love everything about this job. I truly think that being a state trooper working for the Nevada Highway Patrol is probably the funnest job in law enforcement. The freedom that I have as a trooper is amazing. I can go out, you know, anywhere in the state of Nevada, right? And that's a common question that we get, you know, especially if I'm working traffic enforcement, let's say in a school zone. Why are you down here working in a school zone? Well, we're Nevada Highway Patrol. We're Nevada state troopers. We can enforce laws anywhere within the state of Nevada. It's a crazy thought, but
yes,
it's our
mission.
True.
You're right.
Safety.
You're right. It's not just highways.
Correct. It's right. Well, and you look at a highway and what actually the definition of a highway is. It's really any way that's maintained by a public authority.
So, like McCarran.
McCarran. Yeah. Actually, McCarran's a state route.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
absolutely.
There you go. You know, but we're anywhere. And I love that freedom. I love that ability to get out, contact the public. I love that ability to make a change, try and make our highways, our roadways safer for myself, my family, my friends, and our community members.
Was it a lifetime calling? Was it an episode of Highway Patrol? Did you love watching Broderick Crawford racing that Buick, running around with that snub-nosed revolver?
Remember, folks, the careless driver isn't driving his car. He's aiming it.
I can say, you know, it was a lifetime calling, I suppose. There's a photo of me, actually, when I'm about 3 years old in one of the classic Camaros that we used to have with Trooper Jeff Leafley.
Yes,
sitting under. So, yeah, there's a photo of me when I was pretty young. So I've wanted to work for and with the Highway Patrol for a very, very long time.
All right. I'd like to do one more segment with you. Can you spare 10 minutes?
I think we can.
All right, cool. Awesome. Sergeant, I'm so glad you came out here, and I think this is very important stuff. Sergeant Chris Brown with the Highway Patrol. I'm John Potter, going to take a break. Be back very shortly. 99.1, 92.3 FM Talk, FM News Talk, time 10:17.
The golden age of America begins right now.
It's The Weekend with John Potter. 99.1 FM and in Lyon County, 92.3 FM News Talk.
The chains. Somebody is asking about the chains. I wish I knew more about the chains. When the weather's really bad in the winter, I just avoid going out somewhere. The last time I tried to put on chains was 1978, when I was trying to drive up the hill to Tahoe to see Melissa Manchester and Martin Mull at the Sahara Tahoe. And I got half of the chains on one wheel, gave up, and came home. I hear they're easier now, but what do people need to know about chains this winter, Sergeant Brown?
You know, I think one important thing with whether it's chains or any traffic control or traction control device that you're putting on your vehicle is take advantage of the weather we have right now. Take advantage of the 70-degree, beautiful, sunny weather we have. If you have those products, get familiar with them now. Go out in front of your house, in your garage, in your driveway. Put them on when it's nice, warm, sunny outside so you know how they work, how they look, so that when you find yourself on the side of the road and there's snow and slush and it's wet and it's cold, you actually know what you're doing and you're not more miserable out there.
Now, people who use them say, oh, they're easy. Unless they changed them, it wasn't easy for me. And I think of a lot of ladies. I don't mean to be sexist here or anything like that, but I think of my mom trying to put those on. Number one, avoid going out when there's a winter storm unless you absolutely have to. But I think it's wise to just go to O'Reilly's and buy them for your trunk.
I think
somebody can help you put them on. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, but you want to be prepared. You always want to be ready to be in any condition. So if you do have them and you have them in your vehicle, be familiar with them. Be familiar with the gear that you have so that it is easy when you need to put them on. If you practice doing something and you make sure you know how to do it, it's going to be easy for you. So practice.
All right. I want to leave with a final thing I want to bring up. I don't think the public really has an accurate picture of what dangers are on our roads. And I don't think the news media really reports what's going on. Number one, listen, this is a drinking area. This is a drinking state. We all know it. And if you look at the police reports, like I used to do every weekday morning when I was on the radio in the 1970s, we'd go to the police station and the radio reporters, we would go through the paper reports and make notes and pass it to the next guy and, you know, take those notes to the radio station or write stories about what is going on. There are drunk drivers every hour of the day here. The only news operation that reports that, Carson Now sometimes will print the police reports, and it's astounding that during the daytime, a city the size of Carson has daytime, hourly, drunk people caught almost every day. And I think it's a really good idea to get that word out there so that the innocent driver becomes a lot more cautious. You know, ever since I looked at these reports way back then, Sergeant, when the light turns green, I look both ways before I go, because I have never seen so many red light runners sometimes cruising through 2 seconds after the light turns red. So when it turns green, I look left and right before I go, stop your honking. What do you have to say about that, sir?
You know, I think you hit the nail on the head, and really, no matter how good a driver you are, you could be the best driver in the whole wide world, but when you're out there, I tell people it's the other drivers you have to worry about.
Yeah.
So really paying attention. I think what you say about sitting at a light a few seconds, milliseconds, clearing those intersections, that's huge. That's something I've always done, even as a young kid learning how to drive, right? Whenever I'm approaching an intersection, I'm clearing that intersection. That's looking left, looking right, even if I have a solid green light.
The old basics.
I want to make sure, and that's, you hit right there, the basics. And we've gotten so far away from that.
Yes.
And with technology and vehicles, they're great. All these safety features, I love them. I love having my cameras, but I truly think that our new drivers and even some of our older drivers were relying too heavily on that quote-unquote autopilot, right? The sensors. Hey, I get the excuse a lot sometimes when I'll stop vehicles for following too close or an unsafe lane change. Well, that little light in my mirror, it went off, so I knew it was okay. Or, hey, it's given me a green light on my dashboard. That doesn't mean that what you're doing is safe. That little light in your mirror just means that you may not hit something right then and there if it's accurate. So really slowing down, paying attention to what you're doing. Every violation out there, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you're stopping me for speed or this. There's so much more that you could be doing as a law enforcement officer. And driving is one of the most dangerous things you're going to do every single day. Getting in that vehicle is probably the most dangerous thing you are going to do. You're worried about every single person that's out on the road and things that maybe you don't have the control over. So impaired driving, it's huge. Not just drinking, but marijuana, recreational drugs, right? Anything that can impair your driving. Something a lot of people don't think about is prescription drugs. You know, I have a prescription for a medication. I'm going to take it, but it can impair your driving as well. So really paying attention to that, making sure that you're 100% ready to get behind the wheel, that you're not impaired. Focusing on all those other drivers. I always say it, driving ahead of your vehicle. So always scanning way far ahead of your vehicle, looking for hazards, potential hazards, looking for brake lights, being prepared for that. And another big thing that we're missing is putting our seatbelt on. Very simple thing. A lot of folks aren't putting their seatbelts on.
Still. You know, they have these campaigns, buckle up and all this. And I think what people are sitting on their seatbelts.
You'd be surprised. A lot of folks are still doing that. I sound like a broken record. Even as a kid growing up, right? We've had the don't drink and drive campaigns, the sober driver campaigns, the buckle up campaigns. We still have to have those campaigns because people are still doing those violations. The other day I was down in our MERT office, which is our fatal investigation team. It's the major incident reconstruction team. They're the ones that go out to our fatal crashes, our bad crashes, and they diagram and map all this, and they investigate these crashes. You know, one thing they said is the majority of the crashes that they see up here in the Northern Nevada area that play into those crashes, the fatal crashes, the serious injury crashes, impaired driving, lack of a seatbelt, and speed. Those are the big ones. So really focusing on that is huge, and we need to put our seatbelts on. We need to stop driving impaired, and we need to slow down. Be patient.
Can I ask you how some of these people are getting driver's licenses?
Well, you know, that's a question.
No,
for...
you don't want to get into that.
No, you know, it's a question for the DMV, really. They're the ones that control
yes.
issuing driver's licenses.
Right.
When it comes to the Highway Patrol, we just go out and
know.
We're there to enforce the law.
Do you have some concerns? Because we're having some enormous, enormous backups that we report every day here about these backups to, you know, in the morning to USA Parkway. And, of course, we have the problems, 395 North Valleys. Do you have concerns? Because, you know, the industrial park is getting bigger. And they haven't even really talked about solutions to this. I mean, it's just going to get worse than what it is now. You can't exactly build another lane on 80 East. I don't see where there's room in some areas. I mean, you're not a politician or anything like that, but don't you deal with this in your job.
Every single day I'm stuck in traffic. I'm very familiar with the backups that we see around the Reno area. And really, it's expanded from Reno to some even our rural communities are starting to see this traffic influx. when it comes to the design of the roads, when it comes to all that, that's a question for, like you said, our politicians, our lawmakers, for the Department of Transportation. I can't speak to that. But what I can speak to is the fact that as a driver, we all need to be more patient. We need to know this. We need to leave that extra time in the morning. We need to make sure that we're leaving that space between vehicles, because I do see when we do have these major backups, there's usually an incident that's involved with these major backups. What was it, a week ago we had a crash out near Patrick and it backed up I-80 till about noon, 1 o'clock in the morning. Traffic was backed up from Patrick all the way to the Spaghetti Bowl.
Did you have to go out there? What do you do out there? I mean,
you know, so that one, that was a five vehicle crash. It was
right.
A commercial vehicle that rear ended some slowed stop traffic. So it goes back to the basics here. What we're talking about is paying attention to driving, scanning that road ahead, and let's try and avoid getting in these crashes so that we can avoid these backups, so we can keep our highways open to the fullest capacity that we can. That starts with you as a driver, driving smarter and driving safe.
You know, in the old days, the highway patrolmen would hide behind signs and things like that. That practice has gone away, hasn't it? I mean, I think the attitude now is you just want to be out there and visible to remind people, hey, slow down. And, you know, put the phone down or whatever. So there's no more hiding behind billboards anymore, is there? There should be.
I mean, I haven't figured out. I've been a, you know, trooper with the Nevada Highway Patrol for over 13 years. I haven't quite figured out how to hide my patrol car behind a billboard just because they're so high up in the air.
Yeah, that's
you know,
true. But like the good old days.
When it comes down to traffic safety, our troopers are out there every single day doing the best that they can with what they have to try and make our highway safe. And they're doing a really good job, I think.
I think so, too.
I think they're doing a great job at it. But it's not just them.
You're doing amazing when it comes to how many you have available to cover an area this large.
It is truly a community effort, yeah. Right? You have to. We all have to work together to make our roadway safe. It's not
all
just
right,
one
sir.
Of us.
Out of time, we've gone over. Sergeant Chris Brown with the Highway Patrol. God bless you, sir, and God bless those who work to save lives out there on our roads.
Hey, thanks, John. Have a great day. Thanks for having me.
It's been an honor. Okay, I'm John Potter, live and local. We're talking politics up next with the Douglas County Republicans. If you have something to say about that, 775-884-9910. Time for Fox News and local news with Greg Neft, 99.1, 92.3 FM Talk, FM News Talk Time, 1031.
Fox News and live FM Talk Radio, KKFT, 99.1 FM Talk. And live right now with your calls.
The Weekend on News Talk, 99.1 and 92.3 FM.
So they're not here. Maybe they're on 11 or 11:30. Something got messed up. Or... and I always like to say this, maybe they heard the show. I don't know. So let's get to some real news that affects everybody. I found this very interesting. California entrepreneur. By the way, I'm John Potter. Phone number 775-884-9910. A California entrepreneur credited with inventing the world's first frozen burrito died this week. In 1956, Duane Roberts created the first frozen burrito, turning the Mexican food staple into a mass market item that could be stored, shipped, and sold nationwide.
I am truly in mourning.
The product helped transform the frozen food industry and made him a fortune. He invented the frozen burrito? No. Somebody's Mexican grandma about 100 years ago invented the burrito, right? At some point, somebody put it in an icebox.
Well, it's not quite as simple as all that as you'd think.
Well, what?
If you just put it into a home freezer, it will freeze slowly. And that will cause a whole bunch of ice crystals to form. So when you throw your microwave burrito, your burrito into the microwave, it turns into microwave sludge. It is the quick freezing that makes it work. Freezing it fast and keeping it frozen. That's why you don't see all that ice crystal and frost on products inside the store like you would in your own freezer.
Well, sometimes I go out to eat a Mexican restaurant, and I'll put the burrito in a Glad bag, and I'll freeze it. And then I'll take the thing out and warm it up, microwave it, mm-hmm. whatever. And it's fine. As far as I can see, the only real difference this guy did was maybe invent, packaging it so it doesn't get those ice crystals and such.
I've watched a whole lot of food shows on.
Well, you're an expert, I guess, on this. I didn't expect that. But I just did not consider this some grand invention. You know, that's not exactly a Thomas Alva Edison level event.
Well, how did you think of this?
Well, I don't know. I put it like in the freezer, and then after it was in the freezer for a while, it was freezing, and it was like hard. It was like frozen, and I thought, well, it's hard to eat frozen, so maybe I should heat it up. That's, I don't know. I had questions when I saw this. And
I love those $2 for $1 cheapy burritos. Throw it in the microwave for a minute, get a little bit of ketchup, put it on there. That's good stuff.
Oh, we could do a whole hour of burrito talk, my friend. Mm-hmm. And may I throw in a recommendation for good old Speedy Burritos on Wells. Outstanding stuff. It really is the best.
Oh, okay. And I took me a second.
Yeah, it used to be called something else before Speedy Burritos, and I was terrified that they were going to change them in some way. But the California breakfast burrito, whatever, every burrito, they are specialists, and it's a good deal. It's not that expensive, and they are huge. You know, I am a quantity over quality guy, as you know. So, I mean, anyway, I thought that, I read this story, and I thought to myself, I'm not buying he invented the frozen burrito. How about who invented the frozen pork chop? Nobody gets credit for that. Nothing. So
the frozen pork chop was invented when they found a wild boar in the South Pole. It's true, I swear.
I don't. You know, folks, I blame myself for not making any sense. I am still all messed up by this weird deal with a change in the clocks because I'm old. And there's a certain point where you get so old, all you care about is dumb stuff like this. Are they in the waiting room? Can you see?
They just left the waiting room. How about if we go to a break and you go get them?
Are you kidding me? They No. came in and left?
Yep.
They must have heard the show. Okay, let's take a break. I'm John Potter, live and local, 99.1, 92.3 FM Talk FM News Talk, time 10:42.
99.1 KKFT.
This is what I think.
Talk that matters most. FM Talk 99.1.
And 92.3 FM.
Okay, welcome back. Welcome back, my friends. John Potter live and local. I just got the word from management that the Douglas County Republicans are on at 11 o'clock in the morning and that I made a mistake saying they were on at 10:30. I blame the changing of the clocks and, I have not adjusted, and I'm old. I'm old. I didn't know. I'm old. And I hold myself up as an example for you not to follow.
Well, so take a moment to personally thank you, John. I've been in this business a long time, and I have learned that when a show goes brilliantly, it's because of the host. If a show goes badly, okay. They blame the producer. Thank you for not doing that.
Okay. Thank you, Phil. I have time to talk about just top of my head. And you know what? I meant to bring this up last week. The leaves, folks, have largely fallen. Oh, my God. God, we had billions, I mean billions of leaves, and we had to hire a crew to come out with a big trailer, and the trailer got filled, and I had to, you don't want to hear, but this is a dumb thing, but do you know why leaves change colors on trees, and why, I'm old, I find this interesting. Do you know why leaves change colors and why some are red and some are yellow and some are brown? And you know what? Nobody knows 100% for sure. But here's the best theory about among botanists. And I recognize that I use the word theory not in the way a scientist would, but in the way a jabokey on the radio would. Of course, you know, we say, well,
John, what happens is the tree dies, and then the green part goes away, and then the colorful part is left.
And that is what they taught us in biology class, and that is true for some trees, like the ones that end up with just brown leaves, or they get really, really pale. That's what happens to them. But it turns out the leaves on trees that turn yellow or red, there's a series of specific genetic mutations which create those different colors. And there is an evolutionary benefit to these colors. When a leaf is at the end of its the growing season and fall arrives, the first thing that happens is the tree stops making chlorophyll. It stops expending the energy to make chlorophyll, and that chlorophyll quickly dies. It loses its green color. But the tree is not done with that leaf yet, because inside that leaf are a bunch of nutrients that were used to make the chlorophyll through the little veins that go through the leaf there. The tree then cleans out the leaf. It takes everything from the leaf to use next year to make new leaves, takes all the nutrients, breaks them down, and it goes back in the sap down to the roots. And the deal is that while that process is going on for a couple of weeks, the leaf needs to be protected against getting dried out and damaged from the sun, which turns the leaf dried up and loose. Well, before that can happen, the yellow color and the red color are both in effect sunscreen to protect the interior of the leaf from the rays of the sun as the leaf is shutting down. And you and I get these beautiful, attractive leaves on trees as a consequence. Thank you for letting me share that completely irrelevant and completely boring information. But if you ever, you know, if ever you were curious, now you know. And you know what I really miss in Reno, and maybe you do too? I miss the burgundy and the deep purple colors of the ash tree leaves. You know, it's a funny thing, that purplish color, I can feel that it vibrates in my body, that bright purple color of the ash in the fall. And I have so loved over the years running in the woods and seeing those. It's an intensely beautiful color. We had a lot of ash trees in Reno, a lot. We had Raywood ash, green ash trees, but not anymore. And I mourn their loss. They got hit hard by some drought years. They die from stress from lack of water. And then somehow the Western ash beetle knows this. And the Western ash beetle took advantage of that and just decimated the green ash trees that we had in the old Southwest. And now you have the city of Reno unable to save those trees. And so they're removing the leftover ash trees and replacing them with hardier species that don't need all that water and protection. But to me, the loss of the ash trees is a heartbreak. Where can you find the ash trees now? There's a few at the Oxbow Nature Area, and you may see a few scattered in neighborhoods, not like before. Also, if you've been listening long to me on this show, you know that I play advocate, you know, once, maybe twice for something every Saturday. And last week, it was the pigeons in Reno. I spoke for the pigeons, in case you missed it. This week, I have to speak for our, just for 5 minutes is what I got left, for our Nevada ranchers and cattlemen in a more serious tone than I did last week. You know, this advocacy, I think, will go better than the last one. I actually got a complaint email about the pigeon one. But today I have to tell you about our local ranchers. I was reading something last night, you know, about our trade situation with Argentina. Argentina is a wonderful country, great people, really wonderful people. It has some areas that are, from a climate standpoint, fairly similar to ours in one industry that is very big here in Nevada and in Argentina, and that's the beef industry. And currently, the agreement between our government and theirs allows for over 34,000 metric tons of Argentine beef a year, and that's the number from 2024. 34,000 metric tons of beef, which translates to about 77 million pounds of beef each year from Argentina. And President Trump's administration is quadrupling the low tariff imports of Argentine beef to lower the supermarket beef prices by raising the quota of Argentine beef to 80,000 metric tons a year. Our Western U.S. cattlemen are not happy with that, especially because Argentina doesn't let very much American beef, you know, go down there. And God bless Argentina, you know, God bless every country, but I'm an American and I would like to eat American food. And I'd like to see American cattlemen and ranchers and dairymen and orchardsmen and farmers. I'd like to see something that helps me know where my food comes from so I can, as a consumer, exercise my choice to support my country and my neighbors. Nevada has many, many cattle ranchers who raise beef from start to finish. They raise good beef from standard to Angus to Wagyu. And if you look into this, we're talking about an animal, beef cattle, that is a naturally evolved animal that converts stuff that nothing else can eat and turns that into a superfood. Beef is extremely healthy for us to eat. It powers us with zinc, iron. It really is a superfood. We have family-owned ranches in Nevada that follow humane and sustainable practices, and they're facing challenges. U.S. ranchers now have the lowest beef cow herd that they've had in 70 years, down about 6 million cows over the last 10 years, and that's due to some factors: drought, wildfires we've had out here in the West, and the economic hardship that ranchers have been facing over the years. It's very hard to make money raising beef. And now finally, cow prices have started to go up, and I'm sure you noticed that at the supermarket. There's profitability coming back to our ranches after 10 years, even though their expenses for things like feed have gone up too. And they are concerned about the prices you pay for beef now, because for their sake, they want you to be able to afford that steak and the ground beef you buy. And there are the climate change folks. They don't like the fact that we raise so much beef out here in the West. And thanks to our president, that agenda is being pushed back pretty hard. Worse yet, it's the change in U.S. labeling laws. Now, this is what I found out. Our government used to require product of the USA labels on beef that was raised here, but that was repealed 10, 11 years ago. There's a federal law that requires the marking of product coming in from somewhere as imported, but the Food Safety Inspection Service, which is part of the USDA, has determined, or rather undermined, that law, and in memos rewrote the intent of the law, writing their own rules, which has allowed the beef importers to get their product to the U.S. consumer, you, with only the USDA inspected label on it. Now, I know certain ranches that specialize in premium product, like, you know, we see the Harris Ranch labels on their meat packaging. You might see a few of those. But for all the rest, we, the local shoppers here, assume that USDA inspected means it's a product of the USA. Folks, it is not. The USDA has stripped the origin of the imported meat before it gets to you and I. Is it U.S. product? You may think so, but even an expert couldn't tell you for sure. All that imported product lost its origination at the U.S. port, and this is why beef imports have massively increased over the years at the expense of our Nevada ranches and cattlemen, which explains the shrinkage in our Western beef industry. And when a nation loses the ability to feed itself, it's in a bad situation. And our Nevada ranchers, the ones I know, they want to feed the American consumer. I remember years ago, going to the grocery store and looking over the beef and how prices were low, but they had on their packages the label product of Mexico, and you'd also see some U.S. Beef. You'd have the product of Mexico and the U.S. beef would sell out, and there'd be lots of product left over from Mexico. Nothing against them, but the American consumer does feel better with an American product. You know, I mean, we're patriotic and we want to support our industry and we want to be able to have our opportunity to do that. We trust our neighbors, but we're nervous about people from other countries because there are different standards and different regulations and different rules. And we think that maybe in another country, they do it differently or they feed their cattle something that doesn't quite meet our standards. As you can tell, I'm a massive advocate for agriculture. I've been asked a couple of times, usually Thanksgiving, what are you most thankful for? And I always say, the teachers who teach us, the soldiers who and officers who protect us, and the farmers and ranchers who feed us, without a doubt. Okay, I could go on and on. I can't. Thank God the music comes up. Oh, talk about boring people to tears. I'm John Potter. Well, that's my job, okay? I'm John Potter, live and local every Saturday, 9 to noon, 99.1, 92.3 FM Talk. Get ready, folks. The Douglas County Republicans are up next. Stay with us back in a short while.